This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Greeting all of you non-religious rebels. Welcome to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. This is the July 28th, 2012 broadcast of Free Thought Radio. This show is produced in Madison, Wisconsin. We also broadcast in other cities. Hello, all you listeners in the Monterey, California area, for example. And hello to all of you around the world who listen to the podcast.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We're over 18,500 members in North America, and we work to keep religion out of government and to educate the public about non-theism.
Today's show will have a mainly Southern theme. We're going to hear some country music, some atheist country music, and then we're going to hear about some legal victories, mainly in the South.
And we'll talk later on the show with a United Methodist minister who has left the pulpit, is now an atheist. Annalise Fonza is active with Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta. She's the first Black woman minister to join the Clergy Project, that organization co-founded by my co-host, Dan Barker, a brainchild with Richard Dawkins at a Copenhagen atheist conference. Joined by Daniel Dennett, researcher Linda LaScola, and others, helping ministers and priests who no longer believe in the supernatural and want an exit strategy to secular life.
And Annalise has a great story to tell, so wait for that. Last week, we mentioned the Freedom From Religion Foundation's complaint about a Georgia mayor's prayer breakfast, and now it looks like we're a little closer to a victory in that case.
One of the city commissioners in Augusta, Georgia, has publicly stated he agrees with us that the mayor's actions are unconstitutional, and here's a story that aired last week on WRDW 12 News.
Augusta attorneys are talking to 12 for the first time about the national group demanding the city stop hosting the monthly mayor's prayer breakfast.
That's right. Attorneys say neither side will be happy in this case, and we got our hands on new emails that just complicated things. It is a story making headlines. The Freedom From Religion Foundation telling Augusta's mayor eggs and bacon need a side of toast, not prayer. What do you make of this mayor's prayer breakfast?
Well, I tell you, I'm in opposition to it. I've always been.
And Commissioner Bill Lockett is turning up the heat as the foundation sends a second letter of complaint calling for the city to cease all organization of the monthly mayor's prayer breakfast.
You're saying that the mayor's prayer breakfast is political?
Yeah. Most certainly.
Wow.
And the commissioner doesn't stop there.
I don't believe that the mayor of any city should have a prayer breakfast. I have questions about the legality of it.
The foundation targeting these city email exchanges with the mayor's assistant asking a local church to host the breakfast after another church backed out. They call it grossly illegal and declare it certainly has the effect of government endorsement of religion.
They've expressed their concerns. We're expressing our views and we're researching. And there may be some action that might need to be taken.
City Attorney Andrew McKenzie actively working on a, quote, resolution.
Usually neither side is really happy with it, but they can both live with it, and that's what you try to do anytime you reach an amicable result.
This is an individual thing, and the mayor, I think, should get his own legal representation if he wants to oppose this.
The mayor brushing it all aside.
That just goes with the territory. When you're in a leadership position, you've got a target on your back. I accepted that from day one, and so people can keep shooting at me, but I'll keep it to the high ground because it's harder to hit you then.
And the foundation wants an immediate response from the city. The mayor says his event will continue until city attorneys tell him to stop.
Well, it's not just in the South where religion and government are getting mixed up. A city in Ohio actually has a cross on its city seal. And Annie Laurie, don't we have a victory to report about that?
Yeah, just this week, Steubenville officials contacted Patrick Elliott, the staff attorney handling this violation. There's a cross on a chapel from the Franciscan University, which they say is recognizable instantaneously around the world. I think that's quite an exaggeration, but it's obviously a very Catholic symbol. And they did tell us last week that they are reverting to their previous logo. They're replacing it, and then they're going to develop something else. So we're very pleased about that. Obviously, a city cannot send a message that it's a Christian city and a Christian government, and Christians or Catholics are the favored citizens, and all others, Jews, you know, atheists and so on, are outsiders. So we're very pleased about the fast response by officials in Steubenville.
And there's a similar problem in another city. The Freedom From Religion Foundation is complaining about a flagrant infraction of the First Amendment in Wyoming City, Michigan. Here's a story from Fox 17 News.
Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm Christian Frank. Our top story, the church and the cross have been part of Wyoming's city seal from the very beginning. But now a watchdog group from Wisconsin says it's got to go because it violates the separation of church and state. That has city leaders scrambling. Jason?
Well, Christian, there it is, the Wyoming City Seal featuring the cross there on it. And the group demanding the cross be taken off is called the Freedom From Religion Foundation, a group based out of Madison, Wisconsin, which fights the violations of the separation between church and state. Well, recently that group got a call that brought its attention to West Michigan, and it says Wyoming is breaking the law. In a predominantly religious community like Wyoming, the Wisconsin-based Freedom From Religion Foundation, a secular group, isn't overly popular.
I don't think it's any of their business.
But when the FFRF heard about the cross on the city seal, it decided it is their business to get it taken off.
It's simply a violation for a city seal to include religious iconography or a symbol with a church and a cross on top of it, because that says Christians only are welcome in Wyoming City, that this is a Christian city, and that is an impermissible stance in our country.
Jesus says, give unto Caesar what is Caesar's, give unto God what is God's. So it's city property. They can do what they want with it.
Friday, the FFRF sent a letter to Wyoming Mayor Jack Pohl demanding the logo be changed based on the First Amendment separation between church and state. When reached for comment over the weekend, Mayor Pohl said he would not take it down if he legally didn't have to. The FFRF says he will.
There has never been a court case over a city seal or logo, police emblem, that kind of thing, where crosses have been permitted to stay. It would be very foolhardy of the city not to take amends now to correct this violation.
Wyoming City Attorney Jack Slatter didn't want to go on camera because he said he simply hasn't had a chance to thoroughly review case law on this topic. However, he did say, quote, "We're not going to just jump and start scratching the logo off city cars." Meanwhile, with a long and successful history of suing public institutions to remove religious displays, the FFRF is certainly considering legal action.
I think it'd be almost irresistible here.
The city attorney says he will be looking at other cases from around the country just like this one, and if the law does appear to be on the FFRF side, he will recommend the city get rid of the cross. Reporting live in Wyoming, I'm Jason Valentine, Fox 17 News.
And this is Wyoming City, Michigan.
And we're putting pressure on that city because the law is very clear. Speaking of clear, we do have 10 clear victories to report.
We'll try to get as many of them in as possible. Do you want to start, Dan?
Wendy's Old Fashioned Hamburgers in Valdosta, Georgia, will no longer offer a discount to churchgoers. FFRF staff attorney Stephanie Schmidt wrote to Wendy's urging the company end its 10% discount on Sundays to patrons who bring in a church bulletin. She pointed out this is a violation of the Civil Rights Act, which says all persons shall be entitled to the full and equal enjoyment of the goods, services, facilities, privileges, advantages, and accommodations of any place of public accommodation without discrimination on the ground of race, color, religion, or national origin. We got a response from Wendy's Donaldson Enterprises saying that the group has stopped giving the discount.
And we have successfully got the post office in Huntersville, North Carolina, to remove a Christian cross from behind a customer counter. Senior staff attorney for FFRF, Rebecca Markert, wrote the postmaster that this cross display violates not only post office regulations, but the U.S. Constitution and must be removed immediately. The U.S. postal regulations clearly prohibit the display of religious symbols other than stamp art on postal property. And Rebecca told them no court of final resort has ever upheld the government's display permanently of a Latin cross on public land as constitutional. The postmaster recently wrote us the cross has been removed.
FFRF has had two illegal church advertisements removed from Lexington School District 1 in Lexington, South Carolina. The district rents facilities to local churches on the weekends. Forts Pond Elementary School had a permanently installed sign advertising worship services for United Tabernacle of God attached to the ground with wooden stakes. Another sign at Pelion High School was displayed on the weekends. That advertised worship services for Redirect Church. Attorney Rebecca Markert wrote Superintendent Karen Woodward in June, it's inappropriate for the district to permit advertisement of religious organizations or churches, especially a permanent advertisement on school property. The district sent a positive reply saying, we were unaware of the sign at Forts Pond. Thank you for pointing it out. It's been removed. We've also clarified with Pelion High School that the sign for Redirect Church is to be posted only on Sundays, the morning of the service.
And of course, we don't like church services in schools, but there's not a whole lot we can do about that except in some areas of the country, depending on court decisions. The South Dearborn, Indiana School Board, and this is a huge victory, will no longer open its monthly meetings with a sectarian prayer, thanks to FFRF. A concerned school district parent informed us that the school board officials began each monthly meeting by reciting the Lord's Prayer. The meetings, of course, are open to the public and often include young children. Staff attorney Stephanie Smith sent a letter to the school board president pointing out it's beyond the scope of a public school board to schedule prayer as part of its meetings and that opening with a Christian prayer discriminates not only against non-believers but against any non-Christian attendees. An attorney for the school district recently responded that in response to FFRF's letter, the school board has discontinued the prayer at meetings.
Now in Florida, FFRF has removed an unlawful religious quilt from a public hallway at the University of Florida. This large religious quilt was hanging in a hallway shared by the veterinary department and the Department of Aging and Geriatric Research. The quilt said, "All creatures great and small, the Lord God made them all." FFRF attorney Stephanie Schmidt wrote to University President Bernie Mackin, noting that when a publicly funded college posts a statement promoting a religious viewpoint, that statement sends a message that people adhering to certain beliefs are favored members of the community and that different beliefs are outsiders. The associate vice president responded, saying that the quilt was left behind when the vet department changed buildings and we have no plans to display it. There are no more plans to hang that quilt.
This month, the general counsel for the Clear Creek Independent School District in Lake City, Texas, wrote us that they are taking action against the inappropriate passing out of class materials with religious messages on them. There are a variety of Bible quotes and references. We also had a victory where we stopped the Oklahoma City Post Office from putting proselytizing Christmas messages in the mailboxes on his route. This is a violation of federal law. What else do you have, Dan?
And disclaimers will now be placed on religious club flyers at Foothill High School in Redding, California. The Fellowship of Christian Athletes was putting out these flyers inviting students to an event called Campus United to join in a night of worship. Well, our attorney, Rebecca, wrote to Superintendent Jim Cloney, it's important for a district to be cognizant of how this will be received by students and parents. And Cloney responded saying, the flyers will now carry a disclaimer.
We stopped a baccalaureate in Gloucester City, New Jersey. And, you know, these are religious services and that we have mostly chased out of the public schools. But we were contacted by a complainant whose daughter was told that her grade would be affected if she opted out of the religious performance. This was a music student, and if she missed the rehearsals, it would affect her grade. We did get confirmation before it took place that no student should be forced to participate in that baccalaureate or suffer a failing or lower grade.
The same thing at a school in North Dakota. Students at Horace Elementary School will no longer be made to perform religious music after we sent them a letter. Grades 3 to 5 included 7 songs with strong religious themes, including Jesus, Take the Wheel. Rebecca Markert, our attorney, wrote to the school explaining that teaching these young impressionable students Christian music violates the First Amendment. The superintendent, David Flowers, responded saying he agrees. The concert had been inappropriate. The district will be reviewing their guidelines.
So congratulations to FFRF's busy legal staff. And this summer, our four staff attorneys are joined by three smart and hardworking summer interns, J.J. Rawling, Maddie Ziegler, Benjamin Zick, known as Zeke.
And keep listening to today's show. After the break, we're going to hear a country atheist song by Robbie Fultz. We don't hear enough country music on the show, so this will be a treat.
And on the second half of our show, we'll talk with Annalise Fonza, a former United Methodist minister who's now active with Black Atheists of Atlanta and with the Clergy Project. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this week our local newspaper, the Wisconsin State Journal, which has a regular column on religion, a very good column by Doug Erickson, ran one called All the Twang and None of the Religion about country singer-songwriter Robbie Fultz. He's a Chicago-based musician. He performs in Madison about once a year. He told Doug, if you're a country fan and a non-believer, you have to sit there all the time and listen to songs about God and theology. It never dawned on me to take offense at that. I think it's exciting any time a singer expresses a belief passionately in songs. Adults should be able to handle it. And that's why he wrote a song called God Isn't Real.
Go tell the exit.
that's Robbie Foulkes. It's spelled F-U-L-K-S. Robbie Foulkes singing God Isn't Real. Maybe we can
now
get him on our show one of these days.
Now we have a country anthem to atheism. Well, you've written a very good country song as well, but this is the real country singer, so that was fun.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned to hear a remarkable story about a woman minister in the United Methodist Church who changed her mind, as so many ministers are doing these days, walked out the church door, is now part of the Clergy Project, working with Dan Barker, my co-host, Dawkins Dennett. This is Free Thought Radio. We'll be right back in a couple minutes.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We are co-directors of the National Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is a 501c3 educational charity, working to promote free thought and keep religion out of government.
We've talked on this show in the past about this new group called the Clergy Project. It's an organization that you cannot join unless you are or were a member of the clergy who no longer believes in the supernatural. Like myself, I used to be a practicing evangelical minister for 19 years who lost faith in faith. The Clergy Project started last year. Really the brainchild primarily of Richard Dawkins and Daniel Dennett, the philosopher, and Dawkins and I were talking in Copenhagen about the need for something like this a couple of years ago, and Daniel Dennett's researcher colleague Linda LaScola and a few other people started last year with about 25 former clergy, eventually about 50, and today more than 330 members of the clergy. About a fourth of them are active. They're still in the pulpit. They don't believe anymore, but they need to find an exit strategy. And about three-fourths of us, we call ourselves alums or formers. We have a webpage called clergyproject.org that you can check out. And through that page, members of the clergy, former or active, can send us an application to join this very private group where we are sort of a sanctuary, if I can borrow a word, to help ministers and priests and nuns and a couple of pastors' wives who need an exit strategy. And just recently, a woman pastor, a former pastor named Annalise, applied and was accepted into the Clergy Project. And her story sounded really fascinating. She's a former United Methodist clergywoman. She now lives in Atlanta. She teaches and writes as a womanist scholar with a PhD in regional planning into history theory, critical race theory, and thus whiteness studies, African-American history, gender and sexuality studies. But for many years, she was a practicing minister. I think she was in six different churches. She was ordained in 1998. In 2003, she gave it all up and she walked away. And we're very happy today to have Annalise Fonza on the phone with us today. Welcome to Free Thought Radio.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Annie Laurie.
Hello. Now, how did you find out about the Clergy Project?
I found out about you all through an organization that I'm active with here in Atlanta called Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta. One day I was talking with one of the members, a good colleague and friend, and she told me actually about Teresa McBain.
Oh, yeah. Was that Ben Burchall that you were talking to?
No,
oh,
that
okay.
was, he's not a part of the group anymore, but
oh,
that was
okay.
Sharon.
Charmaine oh, great, Sharon. Okay. And Teresa, who was also a female minister who left the ministry recently.
Yeah.
Well, you were both
United Methodist, too.
Both United Methodist, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And so why did you walk away? Well, maybe you should give us your whole story here.
Well, I walked away, and matter of fact, I'm doing a little blogging about this now called There Is No Wipeout Story. You know, a lot of people, when they ask, and I'm sure you all are not wondering about that, but I walked away mainly after kind of a gradual process, but because I just stop believing. You know, I had a profound shift in my consciousness after years of questioning. And in 2003, I decided that was enough, you know, that I wanted to certainly admit to my congregation at that time. I was pastoring in Massachusetts at that time. So I wanted to let them, you know, why I was leaving and just let it go, you know, because I guess you could say, I mean, I answered a call many years ago when I was very young in 1992. I was in law school at the time in Houston, Texas. And so that began a journey for me into local church ministry, eventually into seminary. I got the MDiv, Master of Divinity, from St. Paul School of Theology in Kansas City, Missouri, and pastored while I was there. I, you know, was appointed by the bishop, pastor about four churches in the Missouri, Illinois area before taking a full-time pastorate once I finished seminary and was back in Illinois. And it was in that appointment when I was back in Illinois, pastoring at a very large church at the University of Illinois. I was one of three pastors. This was the year 1999. I was appointed there in 1999. And I just was getting to the point in my life where, you know, I was having lots of dreams. And the dreams or just this kind of urging, this sense of letting it go, or urging a sense of not being involved with local church ministry as a, you know, as a, you know, as a vocational minister, doing vocational ministry. And so I'll never forget it, because I woke up one night and kind of sat up in my bed and I was like, okay, I'm going to play this out. I'm willing to go down this road.
You were growing up, and, basically.
Yeah, I was growing up. I was really, that's what I call listening to myself. Because, you know, you have people say, well, God told me this, God told me that, and you wonder, well, who are you really talking to? But, you know, all those years, I really think I was talking to myself. You know, you know, the thing that I was calling God was really me, you know, because I don't think we're taught literally in this society how to pay attention to our own voice, and we tend to be afraid of it, and we call it God just out of, you know, need to call it something else, because we're not taught to think that we could be that profound, that deep, that in touch with our senses, that we could, you know, sense things. So anyway.
But I want to know something before we go on here, backing up a bit. Some of the members of the Clergy Project say, not like me, because I was a true believer, some of them say they never really did believe. They were just going through the motions. When you started out, were you a true believer? Did you really pray and think you were talking to God and all of that? Or where were you on that spectrum?
Well, I probably believed that I wanted to believe. You know, I was born and raised Catholic. And I'm African-American. My mother was a Franciscan nun, by the way.
What?
So by the time, so she, you know, of course, didn't take her, she decided before she took her final vows, I don't want to do it. Moved back home, met my father, you know, and about a year later, they got married. So
good for you.
I grew up in an atmosphere where, yes, I had questions, but there was really nothing else for me to hang on to, hold on to, you know, put my hat on and say, well, that's a counter argument to what I'm hearing from these priests and these nuns and my family.
So you were? Did
so
you
I
have?
I acquiesced. I mean, I wouldn't say that. So that does that make me a non-believer at that time?
No.
I don't think so. But I was certainly willing to go along with the story.
Were you sent to Catholic parochial schools when you were growing up?
Well, I didn't get sent there, but yeah, I went there. I went to Catholic grade school. K through 8, as well as high school. So I was surrounded up until the age of 17 by Catholicism.
So you were what the Pew Center research would call a switcher. So you went from Catholic to why Methodist, or why did you get attracted to Protestantism then? I mean, obviously, okay, you couldn't be a priest. That might be one reason.
I couldn't be a nun. Well, I didn't want to be a nun because I tell you, my mom was a Franciscan nun. When I was very young, I actually was a candy striper at the same convent where my mom was. And they would always say, oh, you look just like your mother, you know. So that was like, oh, no, I'm not doing anything like my mother. So, I had no desire to become involved in anything Catholic. Actually, I resisted Catholicism quite a bit internally. When I turned about 21, it was after undergraduate, and I was living in Missouri in graduate school, when I switched. I became a Baptist. I was baptized, even though I had been baptized as an infant as a Catholic, but I was baptized at a local Baptist church in Columbia, Missouri. My father came up. I mean, I still have that picture. It was a big deal for me. But when I graduated from Mizzou and moved, back to Illinois, back to my hometown, Springfield, Illinois, I got active in actually a little kind of Pentecostal church.
A lot more fun, huh?
Yeah, they had lots more fun with street ministry.
A lot noisier.
A lot noisier. I mean, it was culturally what I wanted to do, you know. Not that being, you know, involved with a Black Baptist church wasn't going to be good enough, you know, but I was away from Missouri at that time. So I got active with that church, and then...
Did you speak in tongues?
No, I never spoke in tongues. I was always kind of confounded by that, too. I was like, how come I can't do it?
Someday I'll explain it to you.
I never could do it. So from there... what happened in Springfield, I'm in my early 20s, my brother had answered a call. He was being embraced by a pastor to become a pastor, a minister in the United Methodist Church. My mother was attending there, and she invited me. And I'll never forget it, because the night I went, I leaned over to her. Because, mind you, at that time I was very active with this Pentecostal, very small, growing Pentecostal little community in Springfield, Illinois, which was doing everything from street ministry to, you know, just really doing it as far as I was concerned. They were active and they were out. And my mom invited me. And so I leaned over to my mother, who was a little bit shorter than I am. We were sitting down, but I said, Mom, this reminds me of the Catholic Church. This is boring. I said, I will never join this church.
And now you won't join any church anymore.
We have to take a break, Annalisa.
Let's take a break.
But when we come back, I want to know why you changed your mind and a little bit about what you're doing now. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We're talking with Annalise Fonza, a former United Methodist minister who saw the light, is now a member of the Clergy Project, and we'll continue our talk right after the break.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
We're continuing our talk with Annalise Fonza, who was a United Methodist minister for years. And after she left the ministry, she writes, "It was one of the best decisions of my life. What drives me now? To live an honest life, which I came to believe was not possible in Christian ministry." So, Annalise, briefly, we don't have much time left, but briefly, why did you change your mind?
Well, the first thing was I stopped believing in the idea that Jesus saved anybody from sin. So I dropped what we call in theological terms my soteriological kind of rationale. I did not believe that the death of Jesus on the cross signified a salvation for all of humanity. So that was really the first thing in 2003 that I acknowledged, and I acknowledged that openly. Because when I left the church, when I walked away officially from the United Methodist Church in 2003, I held a meeting with the members, and I told them exactly why I was leaving. And that was the primary reason. I said, I do not believe in the central tenets of Christianity any longer, because without a belief that Jesus saved humanity from sin on the cross by his death and resurrection, there's no need, there was no need at that time for me to be calling people to Jesus. And so again, going back to that thing that you just read about me being honest, my thing was, I can't honestly stand here in this pulpit and do that if I don't believe that. That would be a hypocrite, you know.
So, Annalise, what kind of reaction did you get?
Denial, mostly, confusion. Most of them thought that I was getting ready to get married. I was dating a dude in Philadelphia, so I was going back and forth from Massachusetts to Philly.
There's a good reason.
And most of them said, oh, you'll be married in a year. So I don't think they really heard me in terms of the church members.
And what about your family?
That's another thing. Yeah, my family was another story. I don't think my mother to this day acknowledges that or has told anybody that I left the ministry.
So you talk
they
about
don't know what to do with it.
You talk about
but
Jesus.
I really, it's okay, you know.
You talk about Jesus. What about God then?
Yeah, later, over time. I mean, deconversion or my getting into, you know, atheism and non-belief was something that happened over time. So basically, again, my rejection of the soteriology, you know, the story of Jesus' death on the cross led to then a rejection of, you know, who is God and what is God. And I just stopped believing or having a need to even believe in a supernatural being who's looking out for me and wanting the best for me. I just kind of logically, you know, came to a conclusion that this is I believe we invented the concept of God. I mean, that's as human beings, we invented this concept. And therefore, if we invent the concept, we can uninvent it or whatever. That's what I did over time.
Well, you learned
gradually.
You were thinking too much. You were learning too much. I think that was the...
I was thinking, learning, as a result of all my experiences. Yeah. And that's what happened, that I just began to act out of my own human resources and information.
Well, you're a very smart woman. You have a PhD in regional planning, and you're a scholar and a teacher.
And now you call yourself a womanist scholar. Now, that's a term that was made up, right, by Alice Walker?
Not by Alice Walker.
Popularized?
It's actually a folk term.
A what?
It's a black folk term.
Black folk term.
Comes out of black culture, yes.
So what does that mean?
A womanist, a young girl would be called a womanist by her family when somebody in the family recognized her as ahead of her time. So she would be saying, oh, she's so womanish. So maybe she's 5 or 8, and she's acting like a grown person. I mean, only grown people know those things. So that's kind of the root of the term womanist. And there are other cultures that also use this term. Some white cultures also use this term, but that's where I first heard the term, you know, growing up.
So your family called you a womanist, huh?
No. My family doesn't call me a womanist.
Oh.
But I'm a part of, you know, there are many academic, scholarly, you know, kind of disciplined, you know, womanists who are in the academy who do their scholarship out of that framework, out of that epistemology. So that's...
Well, that's a very nice term.
Oh, yes. It's really wonderful. It's not the same as being called a feminist, and I talk about that a lot in my writing, you know.
Well, considering...
A womanist... Huh? Go ahead.
Considering how the church and the Bible has treated women over history, it's time for feminists and women and male feminists as well to be fighting back against that patriarchy.
Exactly. So womanists, yeah, that's really kind of what womanists are doing now, really bracing a practice of solidarity, partnership with others, distinguishing themselves because womanists are typically unapologetically committed to the development of black communities, issues about gender, you know, raising issues about gender and what have you. So.
Now, what about your reception in the black community as a former minister who's now a non-believer?
that's interesting because last year I was teaching at Clark Atlanta University. I was an assistant prof. I'm actually looking for the next gig because I decided not to go back there. It's not simply because of the religion, but many Black African-American communities, including academic ones, are really resistant to anyone who stands outside of the, you know, mainstream kind of paradigm of the church. But remember, I was a United Methodist pastor anyway, outside, you know, because most United Methodist churches are white.
Yeah.
So my reception in those settings have usually been very, you know, people are standoffish. They really don't want to do it. But on the other hand, as a professor in the classroom, my students have been amazed, drawn to me many times, like, you know, she's the bomb, you know. we love her. Because especially the ones who are not, you know, again, in the mainstream, who are not, quote unquote, you know, your typical students going to historically Black colleges and universities. So it's been an interesting journey with that part of it. You know, I don't really, as you say, trip out about it, because if they don't get it, they don't get it. I mean, I try not to spend my time trying to make anybody get anything.
Well, thank you so much. We're out of time. We've been speaking with Annalise
Bonza,
and former clergywoman. It was really fun getting to know you.
I'm Dan Barker.
Good to talk to you both.
Thank you, Annalise. We also want to thank our producer and our engineer, Dave McCann, and our announcer, Buzz Kemper. Find out more at ffrf.org/radio.
We still have some complimentary copies of the June, July Free Thought Today available if you want to call 1-800-335-4021, our newspaper, 24-page, full of information, or ask for a sample copy at ffrf.org, or better yet, join us and you'll get 10 issues a year as a member. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday.